Plugged In. I'm Greta Van Susteren, and today, Iran, North Korea, nuclear weapons, and the world. The intersection, the timing of the Iran nuclear deal, and the planned U.S.-North Korea summit. We are live on Facebook at Voice America, and we want your comments and questions. U.S. President Donald Trump hosts the leaders of two of the closest U.S. allies this week, France and Germany. Handshakes, hugs, embraces punctuated the three-day state visit by French President Emmanuel Macron. Both leaders played up their positive relationship as Macron made it clear his mission was to convince President Trump to stick with the Iran nuclear deal.
We're going to be talking about it. We'll see. I mean, people know my views on the Iran deal. It was a terrible deal. It should have never, ever been made. We could have made a good deal or a reasonable deal. The Iran deal is a terrible deal. We paid $150 billion. We gave $1.8 billion in cash. That's actual cash. Barrels of cash. It's insane. It's ridiculous. It should have never been made. But we will be talking about it.
The Iranians say they'll restart their nuclear program if the deal
We'll find out. You'll find out about that.
Are you concerned?
It won't be
that?
So easy for them to restart.
Mr. President, are you?
They're not going to be restarting anything. They restart it, they're going to have big problems, bigger than they've ever had before. And you can mark it down. They restart their nuclear program, they will have bigger problems than they have ever had before.
France and the United States also agree that Iran cannot be allowed to develop a nuclear weapon, and that regime must end its support of terrorism. All over, no matter where you go in the Middle East, you see the fingerprints of Iran behind problems. We will have a strong blockage to the Mediterranean, which to me is very important, because if we don't, you have Iran going right to the Mediterranean. Not going to have that. But there is a chance, and nobody knows what I'm going to do on the 12th, although, Mr. President, you have a pretty good idea. But we'll see. But we'll see also if I do what some people expect, whether or not it will be possible to do a new deal with solid foundations, because this is a deal with decayed foundations. It's a bad deal. It's a bad structure. It's falling down. Should have never, ever been made. I blame Congress. I blame a lot of people for it. But it should have never been made. And we're going to see what happens on the 12th. But I will say, if Iran threatens us in any way, they will pay a price like few countries have ever paid.
Well, as pointed and pessimistic as President Trump sounded about the Iran nuclear deal, he was optimistic and even complimentary about the planned meeting with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, saying the dictator has been very open and very honorable. Here's the president Tuesday on North Korea.
And as far as North Korea is concerned, we are going to be having a meeting with Kim Jong-un, and that will be very soon. We have been told directly that they would like to have the meeting as soon as possible, and we think that's a great thing for the world. That's a great thing for North Korea and South Korea and Japan and France and everybody. So we're having very, very good discussions. Kim Jong-un he really has been very open and I think very honorable from everything we're seeing. Now, a lot of promises have been made by North Korea over the years, but they've never been in this position. We have been very, very tough on maximum pressure. We have been very tough on, as you know, trade. We've been very, very tough at the border. Sanctions have been the toughest we've ever imposed on any country. And we think it'll be a great thing for North Korea and it'll be a great thing for the world. So we'll see where that all goes. Maybe it'll be wonderful and maybe it won't. And if it's not going to be fair and reasonable and good, I will, unlike past administrations, I will leave the table. But I think we have a chance of doing something very special with respect to North Korea. Good for them, good for us, good for everybody.
And on one other topic, you mentioned today that you thought the leader of North Korea has behaved openly and honorably. This is someone who many people have accused of starving his people, killing family members. What did you mean when you called him that?
Well, we will start with your second part of the question, and I hope that we will be able to deal in a very open and honorable fashion with North Korea. I started a process, and when I did, everybody thought I was doing it absolutely wrong. But in the meantime, for 25 years, people have been dealing and nothing happened. And a lot's happening right now. I can tell you that, Jeff. A lot is happening. And I think it's going to be very positive. And I hope it's going to be very positive for North Korea and for South Korea and Japan and the rest of the world. But I am starting at a level that, frankly, I shouldn't have had to start. This should have been worked out a long time ago. This should have been worked out many years ago. We were discussing that. We shouldn't be having this situation happen to the United States and the world. This should have been resolved by other presidents and by other leaders of other countries a long time ago. With that being said, I think we're doing very well. Meetings are being set up, and I want to see denuclearization of North Korea. A lot of concessions have already been made. We have made no concessions, despite some of the media saying that I've made concessions. I haven't even discussed a concession, other than the fact that meeting is a great thing. And I'm sure that a lot of other people would have liked to have had the position we're having. I will say this. We put the strongest sanctions on a country that we ever have put on any country by far.
President Trump's decision about the Iran nuclear deal will be made on or before May 12th. Now, that's before a summit meeting with Kim Jong-un. U.S. Senator Bob Menendez of New Jersey is the senior Democrat on the influential Senate Foreign Relations Committee. I spoke to him about the prospects for success with North Korea and whether President Trump should decertify the Iran nuclear deal.
Well, let me start off with, I was strongly against the Iran nuclear deal. I led the charge against it.
As a Democrat.
Democrat, and I feel strongly about it. However, the reality is we are where we are. And so what I worry about is that the president walks away unilaterally from the deal with no plan B. What do we do if our European allies don't join us in that effort? Do we restore sanctions and snap them back? Some of those sanctions would bite companies and entities in Germany and France and England, our allies. How would they respond? Would they tell their corporate citizens not to obey? Would they slap back retaliatory sanctions? Would they grudgingly join us? What's going to happen? If they don't join us, then we have Iran laughing all the way because we've broken our alliance. We don't snap back sanctions, which says you're a toothless tiger. So there really has to be a effort here at diplomacy. The first part being, let's get our European allies to join us on all of Iran's other nefarious activities. It's ballistic missile development. It's violation of the arms embargo. It's destabilization of the region. It's support of terrorism. And then work, as we bring them along, to find a pathway towards the sunset questions that are really the core problems with the deal. But just walking away on May 12th, which is just an arbitrary deadline, doesn't give the president any particular leverage.
What would be the deal you'd want?
Well, first of all, I'd like to get them to, in essence, follow us in what the Congress passed into law, the Countering Americans Adversaries Through Sanctions Act, known as the CATSA, so that we start sanctioning connectively, a false multiplier, with our allies, Iran for its violation of the ballistic missile testing, of its violation of the arms embargo, of its support of terrorism, of its destabilization in Yemen and Syria. That would create an economic problem for Iran that we already saw some uprisings recently because of the economic situation in Iran. Secondly, as we get our allies to join us in that effort and robustly engage and enforce, now they are in a different place with Iran than they are right now. And so the next thing to say is we need to bring Iran back to the negotiating table as it relates to the sunset questions where in another, I guess, 7 years, they'll be able to enrich to a capacity that we shouldn't allow them to do. I think that using those moments to bring the Europeans closer to us and start having them act against Iran brings them a step closer to also dealing with the sunset questions. But ending on the 12th, without knowing how are they going to respond, what are we going to do, are we going to slap back sanctions, are we going to be alone and isolated, how does that make our security better at the end of the day? So those are the concerns I have about the president's arbitrary May 12th date.
Well, there may be no plan B, or if there is one, we don't know about it, because Iran has said that they will not do any negotiation, that this is the deal and that the United States agreed to it. They also say the United States has cheated on the deal, and the United States believes, at least from reports, is that Iran has cheated on the deal. Has Iran cheated?
Well, first of all, we haven't cheated on the deal.
They say that there are no licenses to do investments in Iran.
Well, they needed to understand the nature of what the deal was. And I think that they have seen opportunities arise, particularly through other countries. But the reality is there are certain crossroads that they must reach in order to see that type of investment in Iran. They simply haven't done it. Have they cheated? Well, look, one of the things is, robust inspections, to have more robust inspections than we have, particularly at military sites, which we can't seem to get access to.
Was that part of the agreement, the military? Because I remember when in 2015 there was a discussion about whether the inspections included the military installations as well. Was that part of the original deal?
The way it was worded, it was not worded strongly enough to guarantee full access at any given time. And so, therefore, there's a fudge factor there which we shouldn't allow to take place. So there is work to be done on the agreement. But when the Iranians say they're not going to renegotiate anything, that's because they believe that only the United States is going to be in opposition and walk away. They don't believe that the Europeans are going to walk away. They don't believe that Russia and China are going to walk away. So we cannot afford for them to splinter the coalition. We need to proselytize our allies to our side, use them against Iran, and then Iran will certainly come to the negotiating table because they'll understand that the consequences are much greater.
All right, suppose that President Trump decertifies on May 12th, but the UK and France do not, and Germany.
Well,
then
what? That would be the worst of all scenarios. And so then the question for the administration will be, do you snap back the sanctions that are called for against Iran? And when you snap back those sanctions, you actually have sanctions against companies that are presently dealing with Iran under this agreement from Germany, from France, and maybe even Great Britain. So what are you going to do with our allies? Are you going to challenge them at the end of the day, or are you going to ultimately sanction their companies, and what will be their response? And so that's why you have to have some robust diplomacy here to get to where you want to be.
All right, but that assumes that they want to talk, and they say the deal is the deal.
No, I think, the Europeans never, ever wanted to engage in the sanctions regime that I largely wrote and helped pass. So I always hear from the previous administration when we were doing sanctions before they struck an agreement, oh, our allies won't follow us. Look, it takes work. That's the essence of diplomacy, getting countries to do what they largely don't want to do on their own and using all national interests and power to try to get them to do that. That's how we got them to the table in the first place. So off the bat, there's present negotiations going on that suggest that the Europeans will engage us in some of the non-nuclear questions. The question is, how do we bring them along in that regard?
But Iran is the one you need to bring along. I think probably the European nations a lot easier to bring along with us.
My view is that we need to bring our European allies along and have them consolidate it with us, because then you bring Iran along. But if Iran thinks that it can split the coalition, then at the end of the day, it'll be the winner, not us.
All right. Let me ask another bigger question. Is that suppose that President Trump decertifies, walks away from the May 12th agreement. Now he's got the situation where he's negotiating with Kim Jong-un. Is there not a problem with if the U.S. doesn't keep its deals? Is there not a problem? Why would Kim Jong-un have confidence in any deal with the United States? Is that not a problem?
Well, certainly I don't give advice to Kim Jong-un, but the reality is that any global leader in which I'm striking an agreement with of this nature would have to think about, well, if they walked away from the Iran deal, why wouldn't they walk away from a deal they make with me if at some point they don't care for it? So, yes, I think that has to be in the back of any world, the back of the mind of any world leader who is in the midst of that.
But isn't that also true if we get the UK and Germany and France to go along with the United States on negotiating a different deal with Iran? Isn't that the same problem?
Well, I think that it shows that, in fact, First of all, the first part of that is that Iran, outside of the nuclear agreement, is doing a whole host of things that the international community should be seeking to push back on and sanction. So that's the first step. That shows that Iran has not changed its stripes as it relates to the international order. And then secondly, there's clearly sunset questions that if our European allies join us, it shows a more international order willing to say, okay, we gave you time until now, but these questions have to be resolved before the end of agreement. I think it creates a different dynamic than unilaterally walking away. And anyone who you're going to do a deal with, right now, this conversation with North Korea is ultimately one between the United States and North Korea and to some extent the South Koreans. Well, then what we say and do matters enormously in that deal as to whether or not they can believe that they have a deal. And this is someone who already believes that the essence of how you keep his regime in power is to achieve nuclear weaponry. So you have to undo that belief. You have to provide guarantees. You have to create a different environment, all at the same time that you're breaking away from another agreement. And so I think it's a dangerous proposition.
With North Korea, I mean, Kim Jong-un said that he's going to put a freeze on his testing right now. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's at least those are the reports that he says he's going to. North Korea wants something to give up its nuclear weapons. What is it the United States could possibly give North Korea to give up its nuclear weapons? What does it want?
Well, first of all, let me just say we've seen this movie before. North Korea has said that at any given time it will cease its program or stop its program. It has talked about denuclearization. It has never followed through, even when it's achieved what it wanted, whether it was food for peace or other efforts. So we have to be wary. And they've already gone ahead under President Trump's watch and tested an intercontinental ballistic missile. They have tested, by according to some experts, the possibility of a thermonuclear explosion. So they've done the testing they needed already to figure out and show the world that we have the capability.
So freezing doesn't make a difference? Is that what you're saying?
Well, at this point, those are words. It's the actions that really matter at the end of the day, because they've already accomplished what they needed, and so they're using this to seem like they have created some air of reasonableness. The real tests, which is why a meeting alone without deep preparation is a concern to me, the real test is, are they willing to dismantle their program? That guarantees the world the security of not having a nuclear-armed Iran. What do they want in return for it? I'm sure they want guarantees as it relates to their security. There may have to be other partners to have them have a guarantee they could rely on. The regime wants to stay in power, so they don't want to hear about regime change, something that Mike Pompeo has talked about in the past. They want to dramatically improve their economy. So those are all elements of what they'll be looking for.
You mentioned Mr. Pompeo, CIA director, now Pompeo, maybe Secretary of State. You voted against him.
I did in the committee.
Why?
For a variety of reasons. Number one, it's different between being the CIA director, those skill sets, which is about, gathering intelligence, conducting clandestine activities, maybe, killing some bad people along the way who threaten the United States, than being the chief diplomat of the United States, whose goal is to do exactly what we've been talking about, trying to get other countries to do what many times they don't want to do because they don't see it in their national interest or they don't desire to do so. And so it's the use of diplomacy and all of your tools, economic and otherwise, that tries to get those countries to come on board. So, Director Pompeo has expressed a hawkishness to him, whether it is about regime change in North Korea, regime change in Iran. He was the one who suggested that we could do bombing strikes in Iran and knock out their nuclear program. So we're concerned that instead of being the nation's chief diplomat, he will actually empower the president's worst instincts as it relates to war. Secondly, we asked him about the major issues that anybody who's a nominee for the Secretary of State should have expected. What's your strategy on dealing with Russia, on North Korea, on Iran, on Venezuela, which is becoming a real challenge in our own hemisphere? He couldn't enunciate one as it relates to any of those. And lastly, he has made serious I think, divisive and ugly comments about the Muslim community, about the LGBTQ community. He called an adversary of his once a turban topper, an Indian American who actually ran against him. Now, you can't promote democracy and human rights across the globe when you don't observe it here at home.
What challenges will the new Secretary of State inherit at this crucial moment? Tarun Chhabra is a fellow with the Project on International Order and Strategy at the Brookings Institution. Previously, he served as Director for Strategic Planning on the National Security Council. Mark Fitzpatrick is former Deputy Assistant Secretary of State for Nonproliferation. He now heads the Washington Office of the International Institute for Strategic Studies. Welcome, both of you. Mark, first to you. In 2015, were you in favor of the deal with Iran? That's the first part. And the second part is Iran in compliance, in your view?
Oh, I was in favor of it because it drastically reduced Iran's nuclear capabilities in a way that I never thought that they would. I was astounded by what was achieved. I wish it could have been better. I wish it could have been longer, but it was a very good deal, I thought. And yes, Iran absolutely is complying with the deal. About 10 quarterly reports from the International Atomic Energy Agency have shown that Iran is meeting all of its obligations.
Would you make that same deal to North Korea then?
Oh, if we could get this same deal with North Korea, it would be outstanding. Oh, everybody would take this deal if North Korea did not have nuclear weapons. But, of course, they do have nuclear weapons, and it makes it such a different situation.
All right. I'm going to go to you, Tarun. Mark was obviously in favor, but there's been some question, at least I think, and Mark, you can jump if I'm wrong, as whether or not Iran has been in compliance, and specifically my attention's been on inspections and some of the military installations in their nuclear weapons program. Were you in favor of the deal in 2015, number one, the Iran nuclear deal? And secondly, do you think they're in compliance?
I was in favor of it. I worked in the administration at the time, and I also think that I agree with Mark that they are in compliance based on the information that we have. I think there have been questions about access and verification to some degree, but
Are those questions not significant?
No, I think they're fair questions, but let's put it this way.
I can answer that.
Okay. Yeah, and let's put it this way. You know, there's unclassified information and there's classified information. And I personally don't have any doubt that if there were classified information that the administration had suggesting that the Iranians were not complying with the deal, that there would be some way for them to articulate that to the public. We have not seen that yet.
Iranian military leaders are playing this very badly. They're insisting there won't be any access to military sites. They're saying that for domestic consumption. But the truth is, the IAEA has had access in the past, at least 20 times.
So you're satisfied that there's been complete compliance with the inspection?
Oh, IAEA. Absolutely. There's
100%.
There's no doubt about that at all. The IAEA says that they've gone everywhere they've needed to go. The accusation is that they don't have blanket access to go anywhere in the country. And that's just not conceivable.
One of the problems, I'll go to you, Tarun, is that Israel certainly is worried about this because of its proximity and the fact that Iran has been very hostile, at least verbally towards Israel, and Saudi Arabia, too. Why are those two nations so opposed to this?
Look, I think their concerns are about the long-term trajectory of the deal, as we've talked about, what are the sunset clauses and so on. We work very closely with both countries on this issue, and again, if we had reason to believe that there was significant noncompliance, I think you would have heard about it by now.
Mark, North Korea.
Yeah.
Do you give the administration any credit for bringing Kim Jong-un, at least apparently, to the table?
Oh, they get a lot of credit. Oh,
is that important?
It's hugely important because, look, back in the autumn, we were concerned about North Korea being able to hit American cities and that this would we would have war in order to stop them from doing that. Instead, the administration has found a diplomatic path to try to resolve this peacefully. Now, there are a lot of potential pitfalls here. It could all go very badly, and we could be back in that talking about war. But for the time being, we're talking about verification and denuclearization and the definitions and so forth.
Well, they're talking freeze. Kim Jong-un's talking freeze. We're talking denuclearization.
Yeah, and the two mean different things to each side. So that's a big problem. But the fact that we're talking to them, that Pompeo went to Pyongyang, I give a lot of credit to the administration.
Well, but Senator Menendez, Tarun's, thinks that director, now CIA director Pompeo is not the right person to be Secretary of State, although he's the one who made the secret trip to North Korea over Easter and seems to have at least promoted or at least helped move along the process of meeting with the summit with Kim Jong-un, no matter what it turns out. Do you think that Pompeo is the right person for Secretary of State?
I certainly think that Pompeo, for this particular issue in these negotiations with North Korea, could be the right person. We have a history. The Obama administration had a channel via intelligence in the process of securing the release of American hostages, and that's gone through intelligence channels before. I think the concerns about Mike Pompeo are about basically his willingness to send American troops in and go to war without full consideration. And I think
Senator Menendez said it, is that there's a fear that President Trump might send troops. But he says a lot of things. But so far he's been in office in a year and some change, and there have been some strikes in Syria. Has there been anything else? Or is it just the bellicose words?
Well, we're going to see. I mean, there was talk of war in North Korea, as we all know. He seemed to threaten that if Iran chose not to comply with the deal, that there could be something significant that would happen to Iran, suggesting there could be an attack. Look, I think we have a very different diplomatic style here, and we're seeing that with China as well when it comes to trade disputes. I think we all have to see how it plays out. I think that there's a possibility that in some cases this bluster is going to work.
Mark, the summit with Kim Jong-un, optimistic or not? I know it's sort of an over-asked question, but it's such a significant moment in history.
I think there's a possibility, small though it may be, that this may be a real turning point. Look, the most likely outcome will be that they just agree something vague about denuclearization, and then there's a process, and after a couple of years it peters out the way sometimes it has in the past. But there is a possibility that Trump could choose the go big strategy, you know, forget about this incrementalism of the past, offer something big, offer a peace treaty, offer normalization with North Korea, and that North Korea, under those circumstances, might actually, down the road, not immediately, denuclearize.
30 seconds left, Tarun. Significant that North Korea and South Korea are also meeting this week. That's a big deal.
Very significant. There are also a lot of questions about what South Korea's intentions are and how they are really driving the potential bargain here. I think the big concern that I have and that many others have is what President Trump is willing to sell out for a deal and whether that includes the troop presence that we have in South Korea.
Well, I'm looking forward to find out what happens in North Korea as the world is, North Korea and South Korea. I've been to North Korea three times, and they both have the same desire, North Korea and South Korea. They want unification, but with very different ideologies and very different unification. The North wants the whole peninsula North, and the South wants the whole peninsula South. So I think the world will be watching this one carefully. Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Before we go, a thought. Here in the United States, we have freedom of the press, and we are so proud of us. It gives us the freedom to scrutinize our leaders, hold our government accountable, and also tell you the other news of the day, whether it be scandals, snarky comments, controversies, disasters, violence, and more. But if you consume a steady diet of news, I can understand why you might think it's all bad in the world. Well, I'm here to tell you it's not. There's a lot of good out there. People helping and helping complete strangers. Now, check out this video. You are watching 13 tractor trailers lined up next to each other beneath a highway overpass in the United States. They're lined up to make it impossible for a man in the overpass threatening to commit suicide by jumping onto the busy highway to kill himself. Now, the police came up with that idea, and truckers, they immediately joined in. And what happened to the man? The man who was threatening to jump? Well, he eventually walked off the overpass unarmed. I tip my hat to the police and the truckers helping. That's good news, and I thought you might like some, too. That's all we have for today. Stay plugged in by liking us on Facebook, Facebook at Voice of America. You can also like my Facebook page at facebook.com/Greta, and follow me on Twitter. Go to Twitter and sign up now, @Greta. Thank you for being plugged in.